I thought I'd tell a quick story to kick off with. When I was growing up, we used to get the World Book Encyclopedia, the brown and beige cover. We had, I think there was about 26 in the series. There might have been more than that, so there's 26 letters in the alphabet. I think S had two sets, because S is just so big. So we had 27 of these World Book Encyclopedias, and what they used to do, and they had everything in them, like every single school assignment was basically copied straight out of the World Book Encyclopedia. And every year, what would happen is, because new things would happen since 1983 when they were published, every year would there'd be a yearbook that would come out. And I used to love getting the yearbook because you'd learn about all the new things that happened during that year. You'd find out about the famous people that have died or the famous people that have been born, maybe from royalty in some type of family. You'd find out about wars or a little disaster. You'd find out about all these new things that had happened. That was in the 80s. In the 90s, as a teenager, we had this incredible thing on our computer called a CD-ROM, and it was called Microsoft Encarta. I don't know if you've heard of Microsoft Encarta. I think it's still doing the round somewhere. But it was this one CD that you put on your computer in place of those 26 books. And it even had a way of getting updates. You'd get a new disc to get updates and all that type of things. So rather than having to get a new book every year, here was this CD that had everything on it. That was the 90s. In the noughties, which is what we're currently in, we don't have a set of encyclopedias at home. We don't even have a CD-ROM at home. We use this thing called Wikipedia. Who's heard of Wikipedia? People have heard of Wikipedia? The way Wikipedia works is it's like all of those books, all of that stuff that's on that CD-ROM, and more. And the key thing to the way Wikipedia works is you don't just go there to get information to copy and paste and put in your school assignment, but you actually go there and can help contribute to the information. And so it's a user-driven encyclopedia. And so there's this big community of people that are constantly adding pages and adding events. And so someone famous like Michael Jackson can die. Within a couple of minutes, bang, his page will say death of a recent person, and it'll even have a information, up-to-date information about what has happened. And so all these different people can go onto Wikipedia and change things. I know that because I've done that and changed things. You can change history. But one of the things that's built into Wikipedia is there's a community of constantly checking it and constantly editing it and making sure that dodgy things don't come in and that they, as far as possible, things are right and things are accurate. And so obviously they fail at different points. But I know I've gone on and changed some things and they were changed a day later. And and if you go onto someone's a famous person's site or significant things, you have to have special privileges to be able to edit those. You have to be recognized, all sorts of things. But basically, the way Wikipedia works is you don't just go to it for information. You can actually help to contribute information. It might even have a picture at the top with a question mark that says, we don't have a picture of this person if you have one, provide it. There might be a little bit at the top where it says, this is a stub, which means it's an article that we want more information on. If you know more, add more. And so there's this whole community of collaboration and contribution in pulling it together. I actually reckon Wikipedia is a good illustration of where the internet is at now. And so two phrases, Web 1.0 and Web 2.0. Has anyone heard of Web 2.0? Good, I'm glad people haven't. Okay, let me explain to you what Web 1.0 was. It was sort of the Internet Mark 1, like the first edition of the internet. And so the way that you used to use the internet is you'd go there and you'd get what you need and then you'd be finished. Web 2.0 is sort of a little bit of a buzz type of term to describe how the internet is no longer just a thing that I get stuff from, but it's user-driven. I actually contribute to it and I help to make it work and I help to make it happen and I'm part of an online community that contributes as well as gets. Does that make sense? And so like with Wikipedia, you don't just get information, you can help to contribute information. With all blogs and you can leave comments and you go to the ABC or Sydney Morning Herald website or something like that, there's a major news article and you can actually leave comments at the bottom. And there might be a breaking news thing, so there might be an accident on the such and such road. If you saw this, SMS, text, or email, and so you're part of this collaboration type of thing. And so Web 2.0 is really characterized by being user-driven. It's much more interactive. It's much more dynamic. It's not some static thing like the World Book Encyclopedia that just sits on your shelf until a little update comes once every year. So the nature of the internet is it's much more of a living or organic type of thing that just keeps growing and growing and growing as more and more people get on there and contribute stuff and whatnot. And so what that means is that more and more stuff is happening online, more and more interactions are happening that maybe used to happen elsewhere, maybe used to happen by walking to a shop. You don't walk to a shop, you get onto your computer or onto your phone, which has the internet on it. And so this is, I guess, the world that we're living in. And I thought that just to see how ignorant you really are and how helpful this session may actually be, we're going to grab just a few minutes and I'll get you to, how many, two, four, yeah, jump into twos, so two, 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 two. Just literally, just take a couple of minutes and I want you to quickly look at all of those pictures and work out if you know what the heck they mean. Got it? Firstly, have you heard of them is question one. Question two is, do you know what it does? And question three is, have you actually used it? Got the three questions? Okay. These are all things that are very much Web 2.0, very interactive, very community user-driven, dynamic-y type stuff. So literally just take a couple of minutes and work your way down them, and we'll report back in 2 minutes. Go.
I turned it off for all of last year, but then after exams and stuff, this one's new. Green people, it's like bang.
Oh, I should talk to them.
One minute. So if you're not halfway, speed up. Well, if that isn't enough time to show your ignorance or maybe your exceptional understanding of these internet savvy thingies, Twitter. Who's heard of it? Show of hands. Okay. Who's used it? Like who knows what it is? What is it? Sam, what is it?
It's like a it's like a blog, but like a mini blog. So
yeah.
It's just a little, you don't need a
140 characters. So a little 140 character message. You have people that follow you, and you follow people, and you find out what people are doing. Can I just say, this is about the fourth or fifth time I've done a workshop like this, and the last three or four times that I've done it, I've had Twitter on this page, and I've bagged it out and said, I don't do that. Like that, who really wants to know what I had for breakfast or whatever it might be? I now Twitter, and there you go, moving with the times.
On the phone, on your little phone.
You can do it on your phone. You can do it on the computer. Yeah, so I do it on my phone. Yeah, it's very easy. So that, that's Twitter. I have told people I'm here now. Yeah.
It's like Facebook.
I know, but like, why does everyone need to know what I'm doing?
Here's the thing. I've got a friend who has a business who his job, he's making big bucks. There's lots of people making lots of money on Twitter. Yeah. It's lots of businesses are actually leveraging it as a way of getting their business out there. And so lots of small and medium-sized businesses can do that quite easily because there's not many people to manage and whatnot. Big companies have kind of been left behind. So I know someone who works for those big companies as a consultant to help them to see how they can leverage using this social media type thing. It's quick and gets out to lots and lots of people. It's a way of, have you heard of viral marketing? So viral marketing is when you when something just goes viral, something that look, it might be a funny video that lots of people watch, it might be a sensational deal. So Jen said that she joined Twitter. Why?
So that you can get cheap flights. So I saw that there was an opportunity to get $4 flights to Bali or something, or I don't know. And so I went, oh, I'm joining. So I joined Twitter, but then I realised that the dates that it was offering, I couldn't go anyway.
And was that some company doing a promo through Twitter?
An airfare?
Airline. It was an airline. Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of things like that. The band Powderfinger, I don't know if you've heard of them, but they, 2 weeks ago, they had a thing where they did a live secret gig in Sydney in the middle of the day. I think they ended up doing it in Martin Place. It was a pretty easy place to get to. But the only way you could find out about it is they left this little trail with clues and on Twitter. And so everyone in that morning is talking about, go check out Powderfinger. And then what happens when you check out Powderfinger? You go, you follow them, then you get their updates, you hear about when their new album comes out. Like, it increases their sales.
So you just get all that information on your computer or on your phone?
Yeah, on your computer or your phone. So whoever you want to follow. Yeah. Yeah, whoever
so
you want to follow.
So you designate who you want to follow. Like, if you look someone up, will you then automatically be locked into following them? Or
you can stop following them if you want. And there's different programs you can use so that you can... You might follow 1,000 people, but only really care about 20 of them.
Yeah.
And so you can make a group. I've got a group on one of the things on my computer that says homies. And so they're just friends that I'm really interested in what they're doing. And that you don't use Twitter.
So I'm not a homie.
No. Anyway, that's Twitter. It's a micro-blogging, social media type of thing. Does anyone know... Okay, Wikipedia, everyone's heard of it. People use it. Yeah. People contribute? Does anyone contribute? I'm the only one? Okay. Google Wave. Who's heard of Google Wave?
I said one that I have.
Okay, we've got three. You hadn't. So only a couple of us have.
I
don't
really
Google
them.
Oh, okay. Do you know, what's Google Wave?
It's an online collaborating and communication
site. What's that
mean? Yeah, it's currently being tested. Basically, Google have thought, if we could reinvent email and the internet, what would we do? And so it's a way of doing. I haven't used it yet. You have to get a special invitation, and I haven't got a special invitation yet. But basically, as far as being able to collaborate on shared files, being able to talk, being able to. I don't know. I haven't used it. I've watched the videos, and I'm still not sure how it works. But basically, it sort of funnels almost the whole of the internet into this thing called Google Wave, and you have these. I think they're waves, which is like a conversation that. Yeah, anyway, I don't understand it, so I won't get pretending.
Google.
They start with 1,000 invites, and then they'll give each of those 1,000 people 10. So that's how Gmail, the Google Mail, started. Yeah, they gave out 1,000, and then they kept releasing a few more, and it's a way of testing it and increasing it, and it also grabs attention.
So
anyway.
Sorry. That will replace Gmail?
I think that if you use Gmail, you can... easily adapt into that and have everything. I don't know. But yes, if you've got a Gmail account, once they go live, you'll be able to jump on the wave. MSN Messenger, who's heard of it? Okay, anyone used it?
Used to.
A few people use it. It's still used a lot amongst teenagers, I reckon. It's been around for over 10 years. It's an instant messaging thing. So you talk, heaps and heaps of teenagers will get home from school and bang, they're straight onto MSN talking to their friends, bullying their friends, whatever it might be that they're doing. And that's owned by Microsoft. Facebook, who's heard of Facebook? Who has a Facebook account? Okay, about half of us. What's Facebook? Who wants to give us a definition of Facebook?
A waste of time.
Again, there's lots of people making lots of money via things like Facebook.
Tool, if you understand.
Yep.
A way to lose privacy.
Yep. Okay, waste of time. Way to lose privacy. Stalking device. It is bizarre. Basically, the way Facebook works is it's like a yearbook kind of thing where it's where you reconnect with people. And you see their faces and you have friends and you can talk with them, you can share photos, you can do heaps of stuff. Lots of people even use it instead of email. I hate it when people send me messages via there because I've got an email system and it's not called Facebook. There's heaps of stuff that happens there and it's been it's bizarre. Like, I've reconnected with a whole bunch of people from school that I haven't seen for 10 years. We had our 10-year reunion last year and I found pretty much every single person from our year that was online on Facebook, and so it meant organising a school reunion was quite easy. I've had all good conversations with people that I wouldn't have otherwise been interacting with, so it's a medium that's opened up for good in lots of ways. YouTube, who's watched a video on YouTube? Most of us, all of us have watched. Who's put a video on YouTube? Okay, three of us have put videos on YouTube. They're still, Google bought that a couple of years ago for $2 billion. They're still trying to work out how to make money out of it. It's the most popular video sharing website in the world, but they're not quite sure how to make money out of it.
Billion.
$2 billion, yeah. Just a bit of loose
change.
Just some pocket change. Wikipedia, we've talked about that one. MySpace, people heard of MySpace. It's a thing where it started off in the music industry, and so bands would have a MySpace page where you'd go there, you can click a player and hear some of their music, you can become one of their friends, you can write on their wall, interact with them. It was huge a couple of years ago. I think it's, in Australia, there are 8 million Facebook users, active Facebook users, so that's once a week, which is just phenomenal. 8 million Australians. MySpace is down to 2 million or something now. So,
and that's because of Facebook.
Yeah. So the way lots of these things work is something will rise up and be the king, and then it'll die. Something will rise up and then it'll die. So Yahoo bought this thing called GeoCities about 10 years ago. It was the most incredible website-making tool on the internet, and they shut it down a couple of days ago because it's been dead for years.
Wow.
They literally shut it down and deleted all the content. So things rise up and things will fall down, and my prediction a few years ago was that Facebook would take over with the teenagers for MySpace, and it has. It's taken over. Second Life. Who's heard of Second Life? Yeah. Do you know what can you say about it?
It's like an online virtual reality thing where you have a online persona, an avatar.
It's pretty much a Second Life.
Yeah.
It's an online persona, avatar, you make your character,
you play games.
Real world stuff happens, right?
Yeah.
So you can gamble, you can do bad things, you can make money. Like, I think it's died off a little bit, but I think there's still enough users. There's someone who became a millionaire just by selling virtual property online.
Real money.
There's bands who have done live shows on Second Life, so they get some little characters made up of them, and they will play, and so people will go in, and people will buy tickets to go in there. Unbelievable. That's Second Life. 12 Seconds. Anyone heard of that one? Yes. Some people. 12 Seconds.tv is just like Twitter, but it's a video, and you've got 12 seconds. So you can do it from your mobile phone, you can do it from the little camera on your laptop or whatever it might be. You've got 12 seconds, blah, 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 send. And it hasn't taken off, but it may. I've been on Twitter for about 3 or 4 years. It's only really in the last year that it's taken off. So some of these things will just sort of grow a little bit and then bang. And so 12 seconds might be one of those things. Ustream.tv, who's heard of that one? Okay, Ustream.tv, it's kind of like YouTube, but live. So you stream stuff live. So there's radio stations that will have video of what they're doing while it's broadcasting over the radio. You can see what they're actually doing. You can see the things behind the scenes. You can whatnot. I'm actually on a television show called On The Body, onthevody.com. It's an internet television show. And we stream it live via ustream.tv. So we'll say, okay, we're recording at 6 p.m. Thursday night, Sydney time, get on there. And we'll talk to the camera, and we can actually interact with what people are saying as we're talking. And we've got millions of, okay, maybe not millions, but maybe 1,000 fans. But anyway, there's a whole bunch of things. And the interesting thing, just one quick point before we move on to the more serious stuff. It's helpful just to get a bit of a grasp now of some of these technologies, but it's worth not just writing them all off as being wastes of time. And so, one quick example. Who's heard of Ashton Kutcher? Who is he? I don't know who he is.
He's an actor.
He's an actor. He's married to someone famous.
Is it Demi Moore?
He's married to Demi Moore. He's been in some of those like teenage comedy movie type of things, but this is terrible. But he's more famous because he's married to Demi Moore, and now he's more famous because he has the most people following him on Twitter of anyone in the world. And so what actually happened earlier this year, he realised that I looked today, he's close to 4 million followers, and back in, it would have been April maybe, he realised he wasn't far off from a million, and he realised that, let's call it NBC, is that an American TV network, is that right, news network, they were not far off a million either, they were a little bit ahead of him, and so he had a bit of a wager with them and said, I reckon I can get there first, to get a million followers on Twitter, and they were a little bit ahead of him, and I watched it happen. He used Ustream, and he was there broadcasting live, saying to everyone online, saying, go get your friends to sign up to Twitter and follow me on Twitter. NBC, a television network, was doing the same thing at the same time, live across America, saying, get onto Twitter and go follow NBC News. And anyway, so there's this race. Ashton Kutcher got there first, and so he was the first person to get a million followers on Twitter. And it was kind of a little bit of fun, and he said, if I get there first, I'll donate this to such and such, and so there was some good that came of it. But one of the big interesting things is, here's this one guy, yes, he's married to someone famous and he's a B-grade actor, but here's this one guy who can actually command just as much, if not more, and communicate to more people than an entire network broadcasting station. And so this is what you're seeing with the way the internet's going. You can have this one random person, not just him, but actually people that we wouldn't have heard of but for the internet, who can end up having significant influence, who can end up having lots of followers, who can end up making lots of money, who can end up reporting news before the newspaper can print their newspaper and get it out the next morning. Like some of the stuff that happened in Iraq a few years ago was live blogged, and people heard about it because of these blogs. Some stuff that was happening in Iran just within the last year, people are taking these photos, there's censorship happening, but you can't stop the internet. Once they put them on the internet, bang, here's these photos of what's really going on getting out there. And so what you're seeing is this major shift in the way we communicate. Newspapers are dying, like they're about to die. Global financial crisis just adds to it. The amount of people no longer able to work in print media because this online media is just so quick and so easy and so cheap and so easy to distribute to lots of people. Anyway, what's the point of all of that? The point of all of that is to give a few little insights to describe something of the world that that kids, children, teenagers, young adults are in this world. And so the current generation of children are growing up in a way that is vastly different from the way we grew up. The things they experience, what they just think is normal. They've never experienced a time without being able to just jump online and do whatever it might be. Just quickly, there's a quote at the bottom of the page there. It says, "Ours is the only era in the entire history of human life on this planet in which the elders of the tribe ask its newer members what the tribal rules and standards of expected behaviour would be." Got the point of that? What's this quote saying? The quote's saying, like, there's just this radical shift in even the whole ability to pass on information. The whole ability... So in previous generations, there's the family business, and so the father will take the son into the family business and teach him the family business. And even with regards to religion and Christianity and faith and whatnot, there's this opportunity in the context of work, in the context of father passing on to son. That doesn't happen in the same way anymore. Because kids are getting the information before their parents. Kids know what's going on online and know how to program a VCR. We don't have VCRs anymore. What are they called? No. I don't know. I don't even know what the thing's called. The latest thing. They don't need the manual. They can just do it. They know how to do it. I remember seeing my... she's now 7. My niece, when she was 3 or 4, and just being struck by her ability to use a mouse and navigate around the ABC Kids website. It was phenomenal. I'm thinking, I struggle with the mouse, and you're like, bing, bing, bing. No, here, no, close, no, yeah. Unbelievable. And so that's the context in which we're in. And so I've got three, I guess, big underlying principles that as we think about navigating the internet and whatnot, I guess before I quickly read those out, I reckon there's three types of parents. There's the unaware parent. They're the ones who are like, the internet? Well, what the heck is the internet? Computers talking to each other? How does that happen? And they've just got no idea. I don't know if you're one of those unaware parents. There's also the angry parent. They're the ones that are like, the internet is the devil, get rid of it, and run in the opposite direction. And I've experienced and seen parents who have responded like that. I don't know if you're that one. My guess is the fact that you're here and you don't have picket signs means you're not the angry one, so thank you. The third one, and this is the one I want to encourage you to be, is the wary but willing parent. So the wary but willing parent is the one that... they're wary of the dangers and the real dangers that there are online, but willing to see that there's good things that you can do online, keen to understand it, keen to be open in communicating with your kid and helping them to navigate it. You've got the three. You've got the unaware. You've got the angry. I want to encourage you to be the wary but willing. And so as we think about being wary but willing parents, the three underlying principles on the back of the sheet there. Number one is that your kids know more about the internet and technology than you do. If they might be like one, and obviously they don't, but more or less, as they get older, they will be ahead of you. Their classrooms are equipped with this incredible stuff. So I did a day of casual teaching the other day, and saw there's this phenomenal screen at this school, and what they use this screen for, is they go on virtual excursions, right? And so they've got this camera set up. They were in NASA. I didn't see it happening, but one of the students was saying, oh, we went to the NASA headquarters in Houston the other day. And so there's a woman who's got like a thing on her head, or there's a, I don't know how the camera worked, and they're getting a guided tour with a real-life person via this link up, real time, asking their questions, saying, oh, what's that up on your left? And that's the world, that's the schools that they're growing up in. And that's not the richest school around. That's not significantly hard technology to do. And so the context in which we live means that that your kids know more about the internet and increasingly will than you do. Number two, my second underlying principle is that I think by and large the internet is morally neutral. That is, it's not inherently good, it's not inherently evil. It can be used for great harm. It can be used for terribly, but it can also be used for good. And there's lots of good stuff that happens online, and lots of encouraging things that happen online, and lots of... just examples of, so even Ashton Kutcher, like having followed him and seen some of the stuff he's done, through leveraging that online medium, he's been able to donate a whole stack of cash and get other people to donate cash to pretty worthy causes. Compassion, the sponsor child people, they've got this thing on Twitter where they pretty much keep Twittering the one kid until they're sponsored, but they pretty frequently put in up a new kid and they just keep sending it around until they can... There's really good stuff that happens online. And so, want to encourage you to see that there's good stuff that happens, but there's also terrible stuff, and we will talk about that. This is a huge underlying principle, is that if you're a parent, you have the responsibility to be the parent. So back with that quote, ours is the only year in the entire history where the elders ask the tribe, the newer members, blah, blah, blah. That's what you're working against, and your kids will naturally know more than you, and the older they get, they'll know more than you. And so you need to work hard at what's it going to look like to be a parent in that type of a context. What I'll quickly do, and then we'll open it up for some more questions, and if you want to stop me anyway along the way, just feel free to jump in. I'll quickly speak to just each one of those three underlying principles, and then I'll show you some of these tips and resources in a moment. But as far as your kids knowing more about the internet and technology than you do, that's just reality. That's the world that they're daily interacting in. There's the ability to be connected 24/7. But when I say kids, I'm obviously not thinking of a two-year-old. I've particularly worked with teenagers, so I know that world, but I have done a lot of work with children as well, and I think part of understanding how teenagers currently interact means that you can be preparing now, if you don't yet have teenagers, for what it will look like when they are teenagers, and how to put in place good principles and good boundaries and good methods and whatnot and strategies now. So when I say kids, I may not on every occasion be referring to a four-year-old, but there is the ability to be connecting 24/7, and so I know of kids, teenagers, who, they'll text message their friend at 1 o'clock in the morning and say, oh, he really likes me, or whatever it might be, or 4 o'clock in the morning, I don't know what I'm going to wear, or, there's just this ability to be constantly...
You need to... Put it on touch. We forget, that's the problem.
Sorry, that's often me as well. But there's this opportunity to be connected 24/7, and so much stuff happens online. I've already referred to some of it. Commerce, business is increasingly happening online. If you don't have a website, you're going to get left behind. There's things that would have previously been, you walk into a shop, now you don't. Here you go. This afternoon, I got in the mail 2 books from England. There's this incredible bookshop. So the place where I go to, I study in Sydney, has a bookshop that's a little bit expensive. I get a discount there. These 2 books that I bought from England cost me half the price of what it would have cost me if I had have bought them at the shop that I walk past every day. And they arrived in less than a week from the UK. Commerce is happening online. That's what's happening. Education, I referred to that NASA thing before. But education is happening online. For me personally, I don't have to hand in a physical copy of an essay. It's electronic submission. I turn up to a lecture and then the lecturer doesn't give me a piece of paper with the lecture notes. He assumes that I'm going to get them on the internet and add my own little notes in and whatever it might be. That's what's happening with school kids. That's why the government's giving computers to year 9 and up. The world is... This is the world that they're living in. This is the world that they're growing up in. This is the world that they're knowing from a very young age.
They know it's their work or your work. This, you know.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, just if you're reading so many different sources and you're getting, and then you've got to answer a question. You can just pinch a bit from here and there and compile it all together and then submit it. But it's not really your work. It's just a compilation of everybody else's.
It's
stuff. That's.
Electronic submission means it's actually easier to work out plagiarism, because you can actually copy a whole slab of text and put it in Google, and you'll probably find that exact quote if they haven't referenced it. You can lie about your word count when you hand it in, and no one's going to count all your words, but you hand it in and you've lied about your word count, they can actually work out exactly how many words you got without much effort. So there's all those checks and balances that are in place on.
The teachers need to be pretty on the ball then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yep. Most of the time, so from friends who are currently teaching and involved in lots of this stuff, particularly high school teachers, like they know the websites that the kids are going to have to, if they type in blah, 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 they know the websites that are going to come up. They've already looked at them. They know exactly the wording of Wikipedia. And that's still a danger. But at universities, they're policing it okay.
Can I just add that at uni, to submit any assignment, it goes through a computer program now that scans.
Is that right?
Yeah. So, to see whether it's plagiarized.
Yeah, so their due date might be the Wednesday, but they actually have to have it finished by the Tuesday to put it through this system. And it takes a little while, and it scans it all to see if there's quotes that come up.
Wow.
Papers that have been handed in the year before as well are saved, so you can't just copy last year's assignment.
My college isn't quite there, but I'm sure lots of universities are. Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
We
got
a law firm school, year 12. They run it over for HSC tasks.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. It's actually easier now than when I used to cut out the World Book and stick it in and hope they thought that was my typewriter. Okay, not quite. But anyway, commerce is happening. Education is happening online and all these things. You're expected to have access to the internet, expected to be able to use these things. All sorts of communications, all sorts of shopping, all sorts of social interaction. And so there's also the sense in which if you're not part of it, you might be missing out. You're not able to fit in and be accepted or whatever it might be. And so this is the world they're living in. And so more and more old things that we used to do offline are now done online, and more new things that we wouldn't have even conceived of a couple of years ago are now happening online that have great educational benefits or have great social interaction benefits or might even have great benefits of harm. I think the whole bury your head in the sand is just not an option. You will not be able to send your kid to an Australian high school in the next couple of years by ignoring the internet. They will be actually taught how to use it at school and expected to use it. And so I've got a quote here from a good friend in Sydney who's got a blog. This was from his blog about a year or two ago. His name's Craig, and he said, debating whether Facebook, insert there any of this stuff, is a good idea is a bit like debating whether the telephone is a good idea. It's simply an inescapable fact of modern life. You got the point? So it's almost like there's no point debating that you ought to steer clear from the internet. You've got to be there. It'll be expected of your kids that they will be there. They won't get jobs if they don't know how to use the internet. And so forth. Anyway, I hope you get that point. Your kids know more about the internet and technology, and increasingly so, than you will. The internet is morally is not a word. It's morally and neutrally joined together. Morally. It's a good word. Kind of South American. Or Irish. I don't know what I'm talking about. The internet is morally neutral. It can be used for great good, but also great harm. We could go on for a long time and talk about some of the real dangers that are online, and they are real and they are legitimate. There's a current news story that's been on the front page of newspapers. I don't read newspapers. It's been on the front page of the news websites that I look at for the last week or two. Carly Ryan, 15-year-old from South Australia, February 2007, she died. And here's a little quote from the ABC News just today. It's alleged a Victorian father and son created this dude, they made up an identity named Brendan and another identity to contact Carly Ryan, then bashed her and left her to drown at Port Elliot, South Australia in February 2007. I don't know if you followed that story at all, but basically she's met this fictional person, Brendan, and Brendan becomes her boyfriend, and Brendan then comes over from Victoria to South Australia to meet her. Who's Brendan? A 50-year-old dude and his 20-year-old son, and they do whatever they do to her and allegedly kill her. That's still all in the courts right now. I could tell you a whole stack of stories. You just need to Google MySpace. Like you need to Google these things and you can see them. They're coming through regularly. There's real dangers. And I spoke some time ago to a friend who is a forensic investigator, kind of like CSI, but not as glamorous, I don't think. His name's Adam, and I asked him, what are his three big tips, I guess, in thinking about dangers online? And so his first one was, in particularly thinking about parenting as well, is that your children have access to anything and everything, and so therefore supervision is important, and things like computer nodding bedrooms and stuff like that is incredibly important. And so there's his, I guess, his first tip, and I've got a few more tips that I'll talk about at the end. Secondly, also the way his job works is he'll work with the police and whatnot, and so they might do a raid on someone's house. He'll be in the second line, so the dudes will bust down the door, grab the guy, and then he'll actually go to the computer. So he's on the second line, grab their computer, because they've got stuff on their computer, and he's going to get there before they have any chance of deleting or covering their trails. And so that could be people who have extortionists, that could be people who have done other shonky business deals, that could be other types of corruption, but lots of it's pedophiles and child pornography and that type of stuff. And so his second tip is that, this is his wording, pedophiles are unfortunately aplenty, don't chat to randoms. So as your kids are growing up, you need to help them to see that talking to some random dude named Brandon, who you've never met in real time, who doesn't go to your school, who is actually a 50-year-old and his son, a 20-year-old, making up this character, that's just terrible. And so you want to put in place rules, put in place principles, all sorts of things, so that as your kids grow up, they're not going to be sucked in by someone who is online to rip them off, to exploit them, to do who knows what to them. And his third thing is identities are easy to steal. Guard your personal info on the net. So like on MySpace or Facebook, be careful what you make public, be careful what you can easily find out about you and obviously your kids as well. So there's a couple of things. Pedophiles...
Can I ask a question? When you say be careful, what kind of things do you mean be careful about?
Like, yeah, great question.
Where you live or your telephone number is.
Yeah, addresses, where you live, even... So MySpace, one of the things you can do is you can only have your profile visible by your friends. Likewise, Facebook, you can only be visible by your friends. So make sure you have private profiles that are locked so that random people can't see it. And make sure that you don't accept random people as your friends. And so that way, the only people that will see it are the people that you know in real time, and not randoms like Brendan or whoever it might be.
A friend of mine recommended not putting your birthday.
Yeah.
Because people they crack in and they can use it to access your phone banking app details.
Yep. It's pretty much all they ask, isn't it? Often when you ring up something. Yeah, so I know lots of people that will just have the year as their birthday.
I've got a fake birthday on.
Yeah.
Have you?
There you go.
What, could you just have the date without the year, or is that not safe enough?
It is possible to do that. Yeah. They'd have to guess the year. They might be able to. But it happens. I can tell you of multiple people that have had their identity. My sister-in-law had her identity stolen somehow, and she's not particularly online. Like, obviously, they got it from a credit. I don't know
how
they
got it. And how did she find out?
I think Optus contacted her and told her that she owed them $1,000 for her phone in Melbourne.
Oh.
Yeah, so it didn't continue, but yeah, it happens. It happens. So, pedophiles, random people, identity theft. Just a couple of other things, really quickly. Cyberbullying happens. I currently work one afternoon in a youth centre up on the Central Coast, and we've got computers there. I see it happening. I kick people off the computers all the time. They're tough kids, but tough kids are online as well. And cyberbullying happens, and it's something that principals are really working at. How do you deal with cyberbullying? They're part of it, because they're part of looking after children and whatnot, but it's happening out there in this virtual space. And yeah, so cyberbullying is a real thing that happens. Pornography is huge. I could give you a whole bunch of statistics. You can easily find statistics online. I don't need to tell you all the statistics other than to say it's rampant. And I'll give you one stat. It's something like kids are more... I think the first time they view internet pornography now average age is something like 11. And so people can do it deliberately, but there's even ways you can stumble in places by whatever, or by clicking a link that you're not quite sure what it is. And so it's a plenty, and something that you need to think through how you're going to protect and help guard them from that. I even had a year 7 boy a couple of years ago at a school that I was doing some Christian groups at. Said, "Oh, yeah, I'm grounded at the moment." And I said, "Oh, why are you grounded?" And he said, "Oh, my mum found pornography on my mobile phone." And this is a year 7 kid. He's a Christian kid, Christian family kid, great family. And he's now in, I think, year 11, 10 or 11. He's going really, really well. And so praise God for that. But here's this kid in year 7. He didn't even have to necessarily go on the internet. A friend might have Bluetoothed to him. Like, that's how easy it is to do that type of stuff. And so it's everywhere. One final thing, just as far as, I guess, a real danger of online, is just an imbalanced life. And so you can easily waste lots of time. You can easily miss out on exercise. You can easily miss out on real life interactions. And so I think, so things, there's a game called World of Warcraft. It's this thing that there's people who literally live 18 hours a day almost playing this online game and interacting with people around the world playing this game at the same time. And there's people who have died, not because not because someone shot them or they've been nabbed by a pedophile or anything like that, but because they've been sitting inactive. Like, there was some guy, where was it? Mexico. There's a few I've heard in the last year who sat there for 46 hours straight or something like that and died, because and so things can become addictive. And so I think that the younger version of WoW, World of Warcraft, is RuneScape. Lots of the younger guys, and even primary school, are playing the game RuneScape, and so it's kind of on a trajectory, so be careful if you've got kids playing that. I reckon a little bit like parents setting limits on how much you can watch TV, set limits on how much you can use the internet. You can use it between these times and whatever it might be. Anyway, I think a key role of a parent is to help kids to see and be aware of the dangers, and their real dangers. But it's not all bad. It isn't, seriously. There's lots of really, really good stuff that happens online. And we've talked about some of those good things and so forth. But think through how can you help your kids to use the internet well, and model that and teach them that and use it for education purposes, not just to do an assignment, but because you can learn stuff. Like, you can go on a world tour on Google Earth. You can see photos that someone's taken of historical sites or whatever. You can do incredible things and learn incredible things. Encourage that type of stuff. Communication is good. You might have grandparents in another place, or family or whatever overseas. Encourage them to get the internet, and you can do video. Like, you can talk. Like, you could do that every week. Like, they'd be good things to do. There's genuinely good forms of entertainment that you can get free or cheap online, and legitimately, that entertainment's not always a bad thing, obviously. Friendship, you can encourage real friendships, you can encourage pen friend type of relationships. That's a little quicker than sending a thing in the snail mail. I've seen some incredibly encouraging things online. So I worked as a youth pastor for 4 years, and one of the things I was conscious of was helping Christian teenagers to think through how to be a Christian offline, but also how to live as a Christian online. And so when they post things on their MySpace pages or whatever it might have been, to be Christian about it. And so to use words not to knock each other down and hassle each other like their friends might be doing, but to actually encourage each other. They even like share Bible verses and things like that. And I've seen some incredibly encouraging things from young people. There was a guy, I saw a quote on a guy that's doing his HSC now, who I went through high school with as his youth group leader. And it was a really cool little quote from an old Christian hymn. I'm just going, that's an old, I think he probably had an exam today. And it was the first thing this morning, he's put that in. And that was really encouraging, seeing him say that. And he's a guy who's at a school where he doesn't have many Christian friends, and all of his non-Christian friends who are seeing that quote and whatnot. Anyway, the point is, it's not all bad. It can be used for great good. And you want to encourage that. I could give you lots and lots of examples, but I don't think we've got time to give any more examples. But work hard at helping your kid, and as they grow up into being a teenager, to see that they can use the internet for good stuff. And finally, that third principle that's on the page there, before we wrap up, you have a responsibility to be the parent. Yeah, it might be hard in the way that information is now disseminated and the way that the newer members of the tribe know more about the tribal rules and standards and all that type of stuff. If you're a parent, that's your responsibility, is to be the parent. And to be the parent from the young age, before they stumble upon problems, help them to know how to navigate away from those in the first place, help them to see how the internet can be used for good. And so I've just got top 10 tips for parents here. I'll quickly read through them. I'll quickly tell you about these resources, and then we've got enough time for a few questions. Is that right? Here's 10 tips for parents. Number one, communicate. Seriously, the key to relationships in general between parents and children, between husband and wife, between father, between you and your parents, between you and your boss, between you and your employer, the key to relationships is communication. And so you keep those communication lines open with your kids, and that will only aid to be able to talk about stuff. And if they do stuff up and they do something stupid, they'll know that you love them, they'll know that you want to help them, that you're on their side, and all those types of things. So I'll say it three times: communicate. Number two, work hard and understand the online world. You don't have to love it. You don't have to go, I can't wait to get home and go on MSN and talk to all my friends. You don't have to be like that. But it's worthwhile knowing what's able to be done online, and particularly what they are doing online, and understand the world that they're living in and whatnot. So work hard at that. And there's websites that just Google understand the internet. And there's how-to guides on little steps. If you've got no idea about this stuff, you can just learn. That's the key with the internet. I often get asked questions by people. I go, oh, how do you do this? I'm like, I don't know, just put it in Google. Seriously, it gives you answers to almost anything because someone else has asked that question. If you ever get an error on your computer and you're like, how do I fix this? Just write it down word for word and then Google it. And someone else has already, some nerd has worked out how to fix it. Brilliant. So work hard at understanding this world, the online world. Number three, protect your computer. So there's different filtering systems. I've got some websites below that you can find out some of those from. Protect your computer with monitoring things, with filters, with whatever it might be. You need to investigate those yourself and work out which ones will work for you and which ones you need and whatnot. There's more to it than just protecting your computer. I remember it was about 2 years ago, the Australian government put out, I can't remember which one it was called, some net nanny type thing. And within an hour of it being made public, there was some 15-year-old kid who'd hacked it and worked out how to get around it and turn it off and said, hey, everyone, if you want to be able to turn this off, this is all you've got to do. And so all of these things, your kid will be able to work out how to get around them. And so it's actually a bigger issue than that. Yeah, put those things in place in case your kid isn't that computer nerd. But it's a whole realm of parenting and open communication and understanding real danger and understanding real good that can be done and helping them to navigate that and not put themselves in situations that are a little bit iffy. Number four is computer in public, lounge room, not the bedroom. You can do anything behind a closed door for a few hours. Keep the computer out public. It might mean if they've got laptops, you disable wireless. You may not be able to do that because they might need wireless at school. Well, you may not have wireless at home. You might just have to plug into the blue cable at the wall. I don't know. Those type of things, so that you're setting up boundaries and keeping things appropriate and so forth. Five, agree on rules. Agree on rules for internet use. Work out what you're allowed to do, what you're not allowed to do, when you're allowed to do it, all those type of things. Don't talk to strangers. Talk to people that you know from school. Talk to people that you know from your church. Talk to people you know from our family or whatever, but don't talk to random people. Work out those rules, work out those strategies, and you might even write it. You might even put it on their computer table. You might put it in the lounge room where they use the computer, whatever it might be. So there's clearly these rules that you set up.
Do you know if kids are being taught this at school? Like, are they, they should be?
I think parents should do it, but I think that schools are very aware of all of this as well. The government is very aware of all of this. So I've got some websites, CyberSmart and NetAlert, a brilliant website. CyberSmart, it's got stuff for little kids to teach, like little kids can click on it. It's got stuff for kids, it's got stuff for teens, it's got stuff for parents. So it's about educating about safe internet use. So there's plenty of tools there, and schools are very well aware of the bullying that can happen and all those type of things. So I think it's the parents' responsibility, but schools are well aware that parents aren't necessarily equipped. So I think that you do whatever you can to be the best equipped you can to understand this stuff.
Are the school internet lines more protected?
Yeah, so, typically, yep.
So the teachers aren't needing to monitor quite as closely because there's more barriers in place? Is that fair?
Yeah, so school, there might be, these are the only websites you can go on, or particular ones that you can't go onto Facebook or.
Little laptops,
yep.
Which is some schools have already got
yep.
it, haven't they?
Yeah.
So there's only certain things that they can get?
Yes and no.
Okay.
At school, probably. I saw a girl's one that's in my Bible study group at church the other day. She can get on the internet anywhere else and do whatever she wants. Oh. Yeah. So it's only protected while she's on the school network. They can't do anything when she hooks up at home or at a cafe or whatever it might be.
Yeah, guys can get her in anyway.
Yeah, there you go.
A lot of our computer science guys.
Yeah.
And then it's surprising how quickly it gets around the school and how they do it.
It's viral.
Unbelievable.
Which is why it's more than just being able to flick a switch on the computer. There's a whole education process and understanding that you want to impart and help. Because this 15-year-old girl meets this random guy, Brandon. Like, I'm not blaming her parents for a moment. I don't know enough about the situation. But I don't know if she had a thought through a bit more about the dangers of meeting online like that with some random like that. It might have been a different scenario. We'll keep going. I'll quickly finish these off. Number 6, shoulder surf, discourage secret keeping. That is, walk past when they're on the internet. And I've got a distinction. I reckon there's a distinction between ashamed and embarrassed. Are they ashamed of what they're doing because they know they shouldn't be? That's bad. Or are they just a bit embarrassed? I don't know. Like, maybe you do have a 17-year-old who says I love you to their girlfriend online or whatever it might be. That's embarrassing for your parents to see that, and you don't want to ham it up and rub it in. But there's a different. But can you see the difference between something that's embarrassing and something that's shameful? And so, or they might be talking to their best friend on chat saying, yeah, I think I like her, or whatever it might be. I don't know. There's a difference between being embarrassed and being ashamed. And so you want to discourage them from being ashamed. And so regularly shoulder surfing is a good thing. 7, remind them to be cautious. Yep, keep doing that. Number 8, learn the features of new devices. Know what their mobile phone can and can't do. Know whether it can get on the internet. You know what the mobile phone company is offering. Know what the Nintendo DS can do and what they can share with each other. Know, just understand how their things work. So that, again, you'll have to work at that and read the book perhaps, or Google and say, what can the such and such do? Ring up the phone company, whatever it is that you need to do, do that. Number 9, talk to teachers and Christian youth leaders and kids workers and all that type of stuff about the latest useful websites for children. There's good stuff out there, and so if you can keep finding out about it and giving it, that's a good thing to do. And number 10, model how the internet can be used for good. So that means live this out in your own life and model using good stuff in your own life as well. Very quickly, CyberSmart, NetAlert, I reckon they're brilliant websites. MySpace.com has a button at the bottom that says safety tips. It's brilliant. It's got some really good stuff. So if MySpace is still cool when your kids are thinking about getting a MySpace page, check that out. It is really, really good. YPulse.com, it's a bit left field, this one. It's basically a website about understanding Generation Y, and it has lots of stuff about tweens, you know, the whole tweenager, the in-between children and teens, and it's really good just in understanding that world. So it's not just digital stuff, it might be music, it might be culture, all sorts of different things about their world. XXXchurch.com and CovenantEyes.com, don't let the name put you off. XXXchurch.com is very good. They call themselves the number one Christian porn website, which is, they don't have porn on there. They're leading the charge, really, in fighting and combating against internet pornography. And they've got some great resources. There's a section called For Parents. Click that. They've got heaps there. Check that out. They've also got some software that can monitor what happens on your computer. You can install that easily enough. There's another one which I think is better. It's called Covenant Eyes. You can't turn it off. You can't turn it off. You have to get a password from America to turn it off. It's very good, and it's another one of those monitoring type things. It costs money, but it's pretty cheap. And if you want to fight this type of stuff, it's well worth the minimal cost that it is. And the final one there is, I've got a page on my website, purity.davemyers.com, links to articles and other online resources for parents. I've got a few things that I'm about to update. I'll update them later tonight. So if you're interested, just check from tomorrow onwards, and I'll have links to these. I've got links to a whole bunch of other things that are there that didn't fit on the page, and so feel free to check those out. But there's enough there. If you didn't go to my website, you'd still be able to find enough good stuff in that. But there you go. I hope that if nothing else, you've got those three underlying principles. Your kids know more. The internet can use it for bad and good, and you've got a responsibility as a parent to help them use it for good. So if you get nothing else out of this time but that, that is a good thing. If you need to go home, I've only scratched the surface, really. You need to go spend a couple of hours. You need to spend some time reading through these sites, learning them, and have it as an ongoing project. Like, I don't know, you might write in your diary, I'm going to spend half an hour a week researching to be a better parent. But I hope this has been helpful. Any other questions? We've got time? Yeah, we've got time for more questions.
Dave, on the mobile phone thing, you can get on it.
Yep.
So I was just wondering, it's hard, isn't it? At that point, computer in public.
Well, and so there's the whole know the device, what the device can do. And so there are ways you can not get an internet package and stuff like that with your phone company. So there's ones that come with a package, so you can get that turned off. There's ones that you get charged extra to use it. So you might put a cap so that they can only... I don't know exactly the details of what you can do with the phone companies, but you can limit lots of those things. You might get a basic phone. That might be the key. Does your kid need to have the internet on their phone? What's that?
Save you money too, then you can go online all the time.
Well, it is relatively cheap, and so it's not like it's actually a huge cost to be able to do lots of those things. But there's plenty of phones that don't go on the internet, and so it might be that that's what it means to look after your kids. They don't have the coolest phone. I don't know. The iPhone has an application that... So Covenant Eyes have, a week or two ago... sent there an application for the iPhone, and so it's not. I've been checking because checking it. But yeah, so there are things that you can get as well.
So like a filter or something.
Yeah. So that one's more of a reporting system.
Yep.
There's one from, I didn't write it on there, but I think it's linked to from somewhere on one of those pages. Safeeyes.com.au. You can actually get. I think there already is an iPhone one. That pretty much shuts it down, so you can't use an internet browser on an iPhone if you've got Safe Eyes. Yeah.
Well, you can set it for filtering what level you want.
Yep.
Safe Eyes.
Oh, okay, you're familiar with Safe Eyes? Yep. Okay.
Yep.
Research these things. If there isn't at the moment, I will put a link to the Safe Eyes one on my site.
You used to be able to get it through Netalert.
Yeah, you do. I think there still is a link there.
You have to pay for it now. It was free.
It was free for Australia. The government paid, didn't they? Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're pretty negligible costs.
I think it's $40 or $45 US for 12 months.
Yeah.
Pretty cheap.
Yeah.
And can you block YouTube?
you can with a lot of those filtering programs. So Covenant Eyes is more of an accountability software. It tells someone else about what you're doing. SafeEyes is more of a filtering program, so it actually restricts what people can look at as well as reporting. So, for example, for a teenager at high school, you might have it only reporting to the parents what they're looking at, but for younger teens, you might have it restrict what they can look at. So you might say, no, you can't look at YouTube unless I'm here, and then you put in an override password to let them look at it while you're there. And then for younger kids still, you can limit it to 3 or 4 websites only and no other websites. And it can monitor all your IMs like MSN and Yahoo. And
IM stands for Instant Messaging. So, Messenger.
So that was SafeEyes.
SafeEyes, yes.
So safeeyes.com.au, you can find out about that one. But spend a bit of time researching these. They're very good. There's lots of really good things, good tools, and lots of good parent resources as well.
So they come on both Macs and PC.
Which one? I don't know enough about SafeEyes. I think it does.
Yep.
Covenant Eyes definitely does. The XXX Church one definitely does. So generally they work across the board. Yep.
And if one doesn't, you can always find a different one that does. The one from XXX Church, I think that's only just an accountability one.
Yeah.
Not a filter.
Yep. They have another one that's a paid one as well.
Okay.
I think. Yeah. Yep. Same company. Well, thanks for having me. I hope this has been helpful and. If you've got any questions or anything like that in the future, you can easily just send an email to dave@davemyers.com. You can get me via that. There's a little on that actual website, there's a click contact and you can fill out the thing there. So if you ever were looking for something and couldn't find it and you're thinking, who is that guy? Just go send me an email, seriously, and I'll probably know how to help you. Yeah.
Can you see what your kids are up to by Googling their name?
Well, there's people who, prospective employers, Google people to find out what they really get up to, and they find them on the Facebook and see what. So you could, and you'd hope. I guess it depends on how old your kids are. You'd hope that for some of your kids, if you Googled their name, nothing would come up because they've got their identity. They're not putting their full name online and whatnot. But there's all sorts of history things on your computer, and there's all sorts of ways of finding out where people have been and all that type of stuff. I googled Sam Hilton the other day, and you should have seen what I saw.
Well, thank you, Dave, for coming.
No worries.